On this podcast, we discuss medical diagnoses and procedures. All of the guests express their own opinions. You should always seek medical advice from a trained and credentialed professional when making decisions about your own health. Welcome to the Sleep Apnea Stories podcast. I'm Emma Cooksey, and I've been coping with sleep apnea since childhood. I didn't know anyone in my life with a sleep disorder, so I decided to start this podcast. I'm here to build community and provide a platform for people with sleep apnea to tell their stories. Together, we can shatter stereotypes and raise awareness. We'll be exploring all sorts of treatment options and lifestyle choices to help you live your best life with sleep apnea. This is Sleep Apnea Stories, and I'm so glad you're here. Hey there, it's Emma Cooksey here, and I'm your host. How are you doing? I am really excited for today because I'm a nerd, and I have been wanting to do an episode about the Philips CPAP recall really this whole time since it first happened. And I just had a tough time finding a guest who was well enough versed in it from a patient perspective. And I'm really pleased that Tom Wilson, today's guest, agreed to be interviewed. So Tom knows this subject from a lot of different angles. He is a patient who was involved in the recall himself, and he then took on the role of moderator of one of the CPAP recall Facebook groups of patients trying to understand the ins and outs of the class action lawsuit and getting compensation and how to return their affected devices and get remediated devices sent and all of that. So it's worth saying that since we had our conversation, we talk in the episode about how there was going to be a consent decree from the court involved with the lawsuit, and we didn't know when that would happen or what would be in it. So that has since happened. So what I did was I included in the show notes a link to Philip's statement about that, so you can go and read that. There's a ton of different links in the show notes. So again, for people, some of you do listen on my website at sleepapneastories.com/podcast. They have all of the episodes there, but they don't have the show notes. So for anybody, I hear from people all the time who are kind of like my husband, and they don't really understand apps and how to listen to a podcast on their phone, and they're more comfortable just going to the website and listening. So for those people, I would say you can go to YouTube and watch the episode and see the show notes there. Just below the video, it's got the show notes there. Or you can just go on the web to Apple Podcasts. So you're not on your phone. You would be on the Apple Podcasts website, and then you can search Sleep Apnea Stories and it will have the show notes there for you. So those are some ideas, because there's a lot of links. There's a link in there for registering a device affected by the CPAP recall. So most people have done that by this stage, but some people, you know, haven't even heard about this till recently, right? So if that's you, you can go to that link and register your device. There's another link about how to get compensation. So Tom talks about this because this is how he was affected. He had bought a replacement machine, so he's now getting compensation from Philips for having bought a machine to replace the one that was being recalled. I've also got links there to Tom's book that we talk about a little bit. Negotiate Anything. So he talks a little bit in the interview about his work in consumer rights and how to advocate for yourself. So there's a link to that. There's a link to his Facebook group if you want to connect with other people affected by the recall. So check out the links. The other things I've linked to are survey from some researchers who are doing research into the Philips CPAP recall and how it affected patients. So if you were affected by the recall, please follow that link and go and fill out that survey. There's also a link from ResMed, another CPAP manufacturer, totally not related to the recall at all, but they're still looking for patients who are using non-invasive ventilation machines to do some research as they develop new products. So there's a link for that as well. So that was a lot of links, right? Tom did a really great job at the beginning of this interview, really recapping his experience in industry and how he got, you know, involved with being a consumer advocate and just all the things that he does. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Tom Wilson. Just to give everybody else listening and watching the background, we first met because ASAP, the Alliance of, I want to say, Sleep Apnea Partners, did a webinar about the Philips recall. And we were both on that webinar, and I thought to myself, I've got to have him on the podcast because I haven't actually done an episode about the Philips recall. I've talked to lots of people affected, but this is the first time we're really talking about it. So some of it is going to seem pretty basic to you, but I want to just make sure everybody has all of the information. So why don't you start off with just telling people you come at this from a patient perspective, but then also an interest in consumer rights. So did you want to just start by explaining to people a little bit about your professional Sure. background, and then we'll get into more of your personal journey with sleep apnea?
Yeah, my background is I am a business person. I have been in pretty much consumer products my entire career. I'm retired now, but I worked for Colgate-Palmolive in New York. And then I worked for Kimberly-Clark, a total of about 30 years. I've also started up three businesses on my own. And so in the consumer products marketing space, you know, we're talking about brands like Colgate and Palmolive Liquid and Huggies Diapers and Kleenex and Pull-Ups and Kotex. But also along the way, starting in the mid-70s, actually, I ran into a situation where a store was not living up to what they said. In other words, we bought a video game, and my wife asked if it could be returned if her brother got one for Christmas or he didn't like it. And he said, sure, as long as it's not open and you have a receipt. So after Christmas, brought it back and he wouldn't do it. So that really made me angry. And I started keeping a file on different situations like that. And over literally over a 30-year period, figuring out ways for consumers to get what they deserve when something goes wrong dealing with an organization, whether it is a company, whether it is a nonprofit, doesn't matter. So ultimately, we wrote a book on it, and it's called Negotiate Anything. And so I am a consumer advocate. It's just a passion of mine. You know, like most authors, yeah. I made $0 off the book, but it was something that we just had to do. And so along the way, I was diagnosed with sleep apnea and I got myself a machine and happened to be a Philips.
So normally I interview a lot of people about their journey yes. to diagnosis. And for some of us, that story and that journey takes about 45 minutes to go through. We say, you know, when did you first notice the symptoms? And they say, well, you know, and like for me, I went undiagnosed for 10 years. So there's yes. a whole arc of like misdiagnosis and over here and doing all these things. But for you, I suspect your diagnosis story can be done and dusted in like 30 seconds. So can you tell everybody, did you notice that you were having symptoms? How did it come about that you went to the doctor?
Mine was totally typical, you know. My wife was always complaining that I kept her up at night snoring. And of course, typical male, mm-hmm. I said, no, I don't snore. And finally, I relented and I went and had a sleep study, which anyone that's had one right. of those, that's an interesting situation in and of itself. When you're.
So you were in an in-lab sleep study where you had to go.
No, you know, they hook you up with 1,000 wires and. Okay. You can see the cameras yep. where they're looking at you while you're sleeping. Anyway, so I was diagnosed with sleep apnea, but a very mild case. For example, they just measure how many times you wake up during the night. And I was waking up about 13 to 15, yep. which is called mild. I think yours was it 60?
No, so mine's severe. So now 40. It's about 40. in the like sort of 41, 44, depending on which study. So what did they say about treatment?
The only option was we're going to sign you up with a machine. And
so they said CPAP.
Yes. Now, the way the insurance works here in the U.S. is insurance companies, you have to have a certain severity. And with Medicare, and I was just like 3 months out from getting Medicare, their threshold was actually higher, okay, than typical insurance. So I wouldn't qualify for Medicare to cover the device. And so I went online and I ordered a machine off of Amazon. And this was a Philips DreamStation, the one that had been recalled.
So you needed a prescription.
And I did get a
prescription. So your doctor was able to do the prescription, just the insurance company wouldn't.
That's right. So if you look now, you'll see that Amazon does not sell devices. I don't know why they had this listed at the time, but it was my DME. Their price was, I think, about $1,200 or $1,300. I bought it for, I'm thinking, in the $300 range, brand new. So anyway, I got it and happily used it for about 2 or 3 years. And I also bought a device to clean it called SoClean, which uses ozone to clean the equipment. I thoroughly researched it. I looked at all their quote-unquote clinical studies and paid $300. And so every morning, I would drop my little face mask into the bucket and turn it on. And that was that. And then one day I called up one of the largest online purveyors of CPAP equipment called CPAP.com. And I had a question for them. So I had up on my computer screen, I had the website, and I was talking to somebody about a certain mask when I noticed a little blurb on the screen that talked about a recall. And I said, what's with this recall? And so she explained it to me. She didn't know too much. Not that she wasn't intelligent, it's just that.
I don't think anyone knew that much to begin with, for sure.
So what immediately went through my mind was, this isn't good. They're saying it could be up to a year, which for me is code that it's going to be at least a year. You're breathing in these specks and particles and nobody knows. I had immediately called my pulmonologist. They didn't have a clue. They had heard about it, but they didn't know to say, keep using, don't keep using.
Yes. That was one of the most interesting things that came out of, I was doing some research before the ASAP webinar. And one of the interesting things from that, I think I just like heard from a lot more doctors. I just assumed as a patient, I called my doctor's office too, and I don't even have, you know, the machine that's affected, but it's just like, I don't know anything about the recall. So I was calling them and they were saying they didn't really know much else apart from what Philips had put out in the initial recall statement. And I thought to myself, like, they must know all, you know, did the company not have to contact them and give them directions to give to patients? But now it seems like not. I think the doctors just really were blindsided.
Yeah, I had also immediately, like I guess a lot of people, had done a Google search, and I came across a quote from a, you know, really a specialist at Mayo Clinic in Rochester. And he was, the gist of his quote was that they're leaving us here with no information in what to recommend to patients, okay? And he felt like he was in a very vulnerable position. So I'm thinking, well, it's going to probably be at least a year. Nobody knows. You got these little specks and particles, and you might be breathing in VOCs, volatile organic compounds. So I thought, the other thing I knew was that the supply chain was all messed up, and it was wrapped around chips, and these things have chips in them. So I immediately ordered from CPAP.com a competitive machine, a ResMed 10. Which, of course, they were selling at full price because the supply, I mean, this thing had just started. I was at the very front end, the tip of the spear. So I paid about $1,000 for that device. And I immediately quit using both the SoClean as well as the Philips DreamStation. Of course, Phillips was already pointing fingers. It's so clean that it's, well, it's really their fault.
So just to explain, if people are listening and they haven't heard anything about, I mean, I would have thought they would have heard about the recall, but they don't really understand what you're talking about. So the SoClean is a unit that uses ozone to clean the CPAP machine. So lots of, we talked about them a bunch on the podcast before, especially like ResMed have a specific clause where their warranty has an exclusion if you've used that machine, because, you know, they're like, it hasn't been FDA approved to be used with their CPAP machine. Philips, in that initial statement when they did the recall, there was some talk of like breakdown of foam, and you were beginning to hear from people perhaps these ozone cleaning machines could have been part of that problem. So yeah, no, just that's to kind good. Of explain that, to people that that was
that is correct. Phillips also said that they specifically did not recommend you should not use the SoClean, and that they've stated that. Mm-hmm. Well, I still had both of my manuals. When you buy these devices, you get two manuals, one for the quote unquote professional to set it up, and one for the consumer. So I read every single word, all the nitty gritty. There was no mention of do not use ozone cleaning devices. Now, that was probably printed 3 to 5 years prior, but at that time, there was no problem with it. Yeah. And also at that time, when I purchased it, they were advertising, meaning the SoClean, was on television frequently being advertised. Yes. The FDA also had a statement that essentially said that ozone is not effective, okay? And you shouldn't use it. For it to be effective, it would have to be at dangerous levels. But at the levels that the amount of ozone it puts out on its own, it would be non-effective. So that concerned me. So, I quit using ozone too, and I put that away. As long as we're talking about SoClean and ozone, I then wrote a very detailed letter to the CEO of SoClean, telling him all the problems and that the companies don't recommend it. And here's the FDA statement, and requesting a full refund. And they pushed back, but ultimately I got one. They didn't want the machine back or the device.
Yeah, because you wrote a book about how to do that. Well, I'm sure you got a refund.
Yeah, it took 3 months. As I say in the book, you need obsessive brute persistence and facts. They also did not ask me to sign any kind of, waiver that said I wouldn't, confidentiality agreement. So now that battle still goes on. I believe that the FDA is in conversations with SoClean and probably the others. There's lawsuits. SoClean has sued Philips, and Philips has a lawsuit against SoClean. Okay. So those folks are battling that out.
This is the part I need you for, because I can't keep up with like the losses
I know.
Back and forth.
I believe I'm not a lawyer, but I've been involved in enough of these kind of activities to have a sense. And I think that Philips is probably using this lawsuit to some degree to try to deflect the responsibility onto SoClean.
Right. The thing that was odd to me was, I'm not sure if it was maybe the ProPublica article or maybe their little video they did. They were talking about a lot of the ventilators that were recalled for similar reasons. Those are not supposed to be used. Like, SoClean was never suggested as a way to use to clean those. It seems like that's not the only thing going on here, right?
Right.
Are you a new or struggling CPAP user? Are you waking up and flinging your CPAP mask across the room in frustration? Maybe you have mask leaks, skin irritation, or wake up with a dry mouth. You might be dealing with uncomfortable trapped gas from swallowing air or hair breakage from your headgear. If any of this sounds familiar, you're not alone, and I wrote a workbook just for you. The 6-week CPAP Solutions Workbook is out now and has been designed to give you solutions to all the most common CPAP problems. Visit sleepapneastories.com to order now. That's sleepapneastories.com. So as far as you were personally concerned, you saw that there was a recall when you were on CPAP.com and you immediately got a replacement machine because
That's right.
Bought one. So then take us through as far. So each night you were doing just fine because you were on this new machine. But as far as the actual recall, what were the steps you had to go through as a patient with one of these affected machines to return it to Philips sure. or get them to remediate it?
Just a little backstory. As I was sitting there after a few days or something, it dawned to me that going back a year or two, I had had some weird medical things going on. Three times randomly, separated by months, I woke up at, let's say, 2:30 in the morning and threw up. Well, it turns out that one of the symptoms of breathing in the VOCs and or the particulate is vomiting, okay? And so I had gone to my GP, who had, you know, he did what he could do. Then he sent me to a pulmonologist for further study. I went to a gastroenterologist. Because the first time I threw up, I thought, well, you know, I had some bad sardines or something.
But more times than that.
Yeah, and the
really
second
strange.
Time, it's like, well, that's strange. And the third time, I'm like, okay, that's not normal. So I went through a series of tests. And, you know, it never happened again after I discontinued it. Now, I'm not going to say, you know, that's the causal effect. I bundle up all that medical information, all the appointments, the CPT codes, and I sent it all to Philips, and I sent it to the FDA, and I sent it to the lawyers that I'm using for the class action lawsuit. But, you know, at this point, I don't have anything that's been diagnosed, okay? So that's that. I quickly realized, as soon as I read this report about the recall on CPAP.com, that this is a big deal. This is involving, you know, 5 million plus people. It's global, and it could seriously affect people's lives. I noticed that there was a Facebook group, and I befriended the guy that started it, and he had started it, but he was really busy. And I said, well, why don't you make me a, you know, like a moderator,
like a moderator.
Which he did. So I really got the group going, and I'll tell you what my objectives were. I also noticed there were two other groups that had started up. And so over time, I joined forces so that the three of us together were working together, representing over 13,000 Philips CPAP users.
Which is great.
Our objectives are, number one, is to provide the members in our group factual, timely information and to answer questions.
Because that's something that was sorely missing through this whole process. Like, I can't tell you the number of people that I felt so much for because they just couldn't get any information. And, you know, it was pretty much like go to the Philips website and you had that one page and they're like, I have questions.
Yes.
It really was challenging and really stressful and worrying.
It is. I mean, if you think like somebody who's a truck driver, for example, they can't drive or fly a plane. You have to have your equipment, and you're sitting there and nobody can tell you, is it safe or should I discontinue it? I can't get another device because guess what? There's been a run on them. There's no chips. And for, you know, one to at least 2 year period, they were sold out at any price.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So number one is help people get factual and timely information, answer their questions. Mm-hmm. Try to get major media coverage. We've been successful with New York Times, LA Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal. I'd like to say ProPublica, but that, you know, and that was the best coverage out there. So that's number two. Number three was putting pressure on the company by leveraging their security analysts that follow the company, sending them questions to ask during quarterly calls. And the fourth is, I've been dealing directly
thinking.
With the largest stockholder in the company. It's a French family, suggesting what they might do to help alleviate. And last but not least is we made connection with high levels at the FDA to, if nothing else, because the FDA can't share any private information with us, but to
right.
to send them literally quotes from what we're hearing from our members, which they in turn have yes. forwarded to Philips.
I guess because my Google is so used to seeing nothing but sleep apnea from me, it seemed like for months and months, all I saw was like, have you been affected by this Philips yes. CPAP recall? Because there's going to be a class action lawsuit. And so can you tell us, like, I have a degree in law from a Scottish university, so I am not up on like class action lawsuits here in the United States. So can you maybe explain a little bit about the legal action and how that started and how that
sure.
went?
Sure. Again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to call them ambulance chasers. I guess I just did. But, you know, the law firms around the country, they keep their ear to the rail, so to speak, that if something pops up, whether it's, you know, the J&J talcum powder, the abdominal yes. mesh. And so this one popped up and they could see it's a big deal. And it's also tied to a big company, big global company. Yeah. And so within a year, there was, I think, 125 law firms that, you know, had filed suits. And so nobody could manage that. So the way it works in the U.S. at least is you consolidate yeah. them all into one lawsuit. There's a board of lawyers that picks out somebody, one of the judges, to head that up. And in this case, it's called Judge Joy Conte in Pittsburgh, the Western District. So they consolidate all these lawsuits into one and they divide them up and they say, okay, XYZ law firm, you're in charge of building a database to put all the names in.
Of all the plaintiffs, so all the people yes. who've been affected are going to go
so
into this one.
So different law firms have different responsibilities, which are designated by the Judge Conte. She said she wanted to move this fast, and she defined fast as 3 years. So we're about 2 years, about a year and a half into it, I guess, something like that. There's three parts to the lawsuit. Number one is financial compensation for those people like myself that went out and had to buy a replacement machine. We're going to get our money back.
Yes.
I think there's going to be some compensation for people that turned in a device that was 1 year old and they, in return, got one back that was 4 years old. Yeah, some people said they came back dirty. You know, they were dirty. Yeah. Philips did the bare minimum because with these devices, you have the device, you have a power cord, you have a humidifier. They just threw it in a bag and it was just the one part. You didn't even get a power cord. So if you didn't save your power cord from the other device,
yeah.
you had to get a power cord. So they really did right. do the bare minimum. Three parts to the law. So there's the cash compensation,
yes.
which should disbursements, I believe, yes. should be made this year, later this year. That's number one. Number two is medical monitoring. So if you've been exposed to this right. particular VOCs, they'll set up something. I don't know what it will be. It could be some kind of labs every now and then, a scan. That's to be determined. And then number three is for those that perhaps have died or have serious medical conditions, some recognition of compensation for them. That's the most difficult part because Philips will tell you that their products are safe and effective. And the other side, the plaintiff side, will say that, no, your device actually caused this. It's pretty hard to have let's face it, they could never 100% say that cigarette smoking caused cancer. And the tobacco folks right. fought it for years. So it's the same kind of thing here. And you get the experts yeah. on both sides.
And I think one of the things that I've kind of heard, probably more from the Philips side, is that, you know, like so many different things can cause, like we don't know what causes some
yes.
of these cancers. But I think when you start see them coming up again and again in this population of people who have been using these particular machines, so maybe we won't ever
no.
know.
Well, And the folks listening may have heard this. It's because it's been on the news for, gosh, I don't know, maybe 10 years now.
Yeah.
The beautiful Johnson & Johnson company and their baby powder. Well, guess what? You know, a lot of people claim that they died from inhalation of that powder because it has asbestos in it. J&J, even though they've lost billions of dollars of lawsuits already, and it's not done yet, claims that the talcum powder did not. So this comes down to either a judge or a jury making a call. I'm quite sure that Philips doesn't want to have a jury trial because juries, let's face it, they tend to lean in the favor of the plaintiffs. Yeah. So we'll have to see where this leads. But phase one, the financial portion, recognition of buying a machine and getting refunded, should happen this year.
So then people will just kind of watch the space of what they have to do in order to get refunded money if they were in a position.
A website that was set up and there's a big gnarly form to fill out and it's confusing. And the website, at least early on, didn't work right. And I called and the person that answered could have cared less. It's just not pretty, but you know, it is.
Imagine being a podcaster trying to get someone from Philips to come on my podcast.
I have written at least six senior executives from the CEO down, and I've, besides getting a little happy talk from one of their media people, I've heard nothing.
Yeah.
So
I bet.
You know, the lawsuit is proceeding. The other big wild card, and one thing I want to mention is, right after the recall was announced, Philips stock declined 75%. So 3/4 of the value of the entire company, and they make MRI
so
scanners and all kinds of medical equipment. 3/4 of the company just went up in smoke. And then I think right now it's down around 2/3. Okay. And the big dark cloud besides this lawsuit is what's called the Justice Department has a consent decree, okay, which just, they're going to provide some rules that and fines that Philips is going to have to adhere to. Those have been under negotiation or discussion now for at least a year and a half, and those can go really bad for a company, and no one knows which way that's going to go. So
do we know
no
a time
one knows
frame
what a
for
time
that?
Frame is? Only that it's ongoing discussions. That's what Philip says, is we're having ongoing discussions. Obviously we can't discuss it. And so as an investor, it's like you've got this big wild card that you don't know what's going to happen. So investors are reluctant to invest in Philips. And so what's happening, because these products are branded Philips, it's affecting across all their lines of products, whether it's toothbrushes, MRI scanners, or all the products they make.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about was just the FDA's response to this. Like, I think from my point of view, I thought it was a bit frustrating that they weren't, more involved more quickly. And you just are way more in the middle of it than I am. So what do you see in the FDA? And like, do they need more funding to be more effective? Do we need to give them more power so that they can hold companies to account? What do you think?
There's three divisions within the FDA to regulate different products. This one happens to fall under devices. A guy named Dr. Jeff Shuren, he's been in his role for a long time. I think, and I'm not an expert, but I think that as a governmental body, their hands are pretty tied. I'm quite sure, just because I've had a couple discussions, that they are mad at Philips and not happy. I think they could have been stronger early on, because this would be very poor, okay, in terms of the response and how it was managed. But they claim that the products are, and there's a word that they used, and this is not the one, but the products are generally safe and effective. Okay, there's a little bit of a qualifier, because nothing is 100%. And
right.
So if something is generally safe and effective, that means that some of the time, maybe it's not. FDA made a statement that they didn't know if they agreed with all the findings that Philips came up. So they had requested some further data. And that's being developed now. But the whole recall worldwide, you have to talk to, I think, about 5 different groups. You have the consumer, you have the medical community, the pulmonologists, the sleep people, You have the DMEs, durable medical equipment dealers who sell it, or the online people like CPAP.com. Then you have the insurance companies. And on the other side, you have the government, Medicare, Medicaid, Veterans Affairs.
Yes.
And it became so gnarly, and there's no one that I've spoken to, or I've heard others spoken with, that say, oh yes, we feel like they kept us in the loop and we were fully informed.
The other thing that happened was, especially in those early days where doctors and DME companies really weren't given any information to go off of, aside from what Philips put out to everybody, patients would be saying that they were going to their doctor and the doctor was saying, well, we just prescribed the machine. And then they would send them to the DME company and the DME company would be like, we don't know any more than your doctor does. And they'd all just kind of send them back to Philips, which was just this annoying one-page website. I think for so many people, especially in the United States, they're coming to the end of this process where they've already completed the form online and all of that. But some of the people who have been left behind by this process are people, elderly people with no access to, you know, I just heard recently a story about an elderly gentleman who had a recalled machine, hadn't been to his sleep specialist in a long time, didn't know about the recall, didn't have access to the internet to do all of those steps. So for anybody who might be supporting someone in that situation, the first step, if somebody has a recall device and hasn't yet taken action, they need to go find that Philips website and enter their details. Yes. That's the first step, mm-hmm. right?
Okay. Now the recall site, like in my case, I had a device that I paid for cash and I'm seeking compensation. That was put together, I believe, by the courts, I think. Maybe Philips put it together, but I think under the direction of the courts.
Okay. So if people are actually in a position where they bought a different device because they figured out that theirs had been recalled, there is also something else they can fill out to get the compensation. So we can put links. Sure. Once you give them to me, I can put links in the show notes so that people can easily find them. And then as far as support goes, do you want to tell people about where they can find your Facebook group in case they want to connect with you?
It's Philips CPAP Recall Support Group.
Awesome. So I'll put that in the show notes as well, and then people can link straight to it. Was there anything else that we didn't cover? I feel like we've kind of covered a lot.
Those are the key points. I would say if you owned one of these devices, you know, get involved, follow it, go to those links, join the class action lawsuit if you can. That's what you can do as an individual.
Yeah. And tell everyone again about your book.
Yes. Negotiate Anything, Tom Wilson. Got a pink cover.
We can link to that as well. Well, listen, Tom, thank you so much for your time.
Okay.
I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for listening. I love hearing from you. If you'd like to be featured in an upcoming episode of the podcast, please email me at sleepapneastories@gmail.com. That's also the place to get in touch if you just want to say hi or ask a question. Alternatively, I'm over on Instagram. My handle there is Sleep Apnea Stories. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe or follow, rate and review wherever you listen. This really helps a wider audience find the episodes, and I really appreciate it.